Finally, the CIA culture is a Rambo culture. It is not a sloppy statement about machismo and pointless aggression. Whatever you call it, and however you oversee it, the U.S. intelligence establishment seems to default to a culture that rewards the person who breaks the rules and does the no more Mr. Nice Guy routine, either with detainees, intelligence sources, or something as basic as following orders. In that environment, does a statement like this from Vice President Joseph Biden have any meaning?
The most important piece is we're big enough, strong enough, and consistent enough to say we made a mistake.
We made a mistake. That's Biden's version of the importance of the Senate's torture report. We made a mistake and we'll never do it again. It's important to note that four of the people responsible for U.S. foreign policy were once part of the body that is supposed to oversee and constrain the intelligence establishment. Chuck Hagel at Defense, Joseph Biden speaking there as Vice President, John Kerry, who you heard earlier this hour as Secretary of State, and of course, President Barack Obama himself, all former senators, some of whom actually helped craft the flawed legal framework for our country's policies on detention. Jennifer Daskal is an attorney with Human Rights Watch and a professor at American University Washington College of Law. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you.
So it's interesting that there are so many senators here in the senior policy realm of the Obama administration, and yet the laws that some of them may have helped craft or have had some input on seem not to have worked here.
I actually don't think the problem here is the law. So the law is pretty clear. Torture is prohibited thanks to the McCain Amendment that became law in 2006. Cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment is absolutely prohibited by U.S. government personnel to any person in its physical custody, regardless of whether it's the military, the CIA, or anybody else. And so the problem here was the interpretation of the law and how it was applied. So the law is not the culprit here. It's the way it was interpreted away by certain officials during this time period.
Now, is this rational and reasonable interpretation, or is this a, you know, what's his name, John Yoo, who's out at Berkeley, or Alberto Gonzalez, who really pushed things to the limit on some of these questions?
I mean, it's hard to conceive how this could be a rational interpretation of the law. Waterboarding, one of the techniques that was used in which an individual is basically the simulated drowning, and there's graphic testimony in the report about one of the detainees having basically being close to unconscious with bubbles coming out of his mouth. That's historically been interpreted as torture. We prosecuted people for torture for that in the early 20th century. So the idea that some of these techniques were deemed lawful, were deemed not torture, is inconceivable, and it's even more inconceivable that they wouldn't be deemed cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. And in fact, one of the more disturbing parts of the report, I thought, was the way in which certain officials in the Department of Justice reinterpreted the law even after there were changes made when cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment was made unlawful, and there were changes made after a big Supreme Court ruling to the War Crimes Act. And reportedly, according to this report, there were memos that were being constructed that found ways around these legal prohibitions.
So the tidy public radio discussion about what to do now really should probably have nothing to do with more laws, you're saying, that it needs to be about prosecution of the laws that we have. Otherwise, the doctrine that you've just described will end up like the War Powers Act, ignored and on the books. And other acts and legal doctrines which are there on the books, but nobody pays any attention to them.
Right. I mean, I certainly think that there's ways that the law can be tightened up. I don't think that that's a useless attempt. But I think the more important exercise here, I think the more important thing is the fact that this report is released. With the fact that this report is released, I think, is the best preventive measure we could have for these types of actions going on in the future.
But how do you say that? If former CIA officials are in the Wall Street Journal saying this is an imbalanced report, that it's partisan, and that it does not fairly characterize the U.S. intelligence establishment.
I mean, they have to say that. They're defending their reputation. They're potentially defending themselves from criminal prosecution. They're defending the reputation of people who worked for them. To their credit, they were operating in a time where they were incredible fear about what was going to happen to the American people. And they believed, I think, that they were trying to defend the United States. But that said, there's details in this report about just the lack of advance planning. Nobody knew what to do with these detainees after they were taken into custody. There was some discussion in the report about how one of the first detainees they thought was going to be have to kept incommunicado for the rest of his life because they had no exit strategy. You go through the report and you see all the diplomatic costs where allies who were initially cooperating with the United States, when some of this started to become public, they withdrew their cooperation and they became increasingly more comfortable. The United States became isolated in its attempt to carry out this program, and it will be isolated going forward. Nobody's going to want to cooperate with the United States in this type of program, and operators are not going to want to put their professional lives on the line to engage in these types of actions in the future. And any rational leader would have to take into account all of the costs that are associated with the fact that something like this will eventually become public. It is not possible to hide it in secrecy. We know that from this. We know that from all the Snowden revelations that the Bush administration was doing a lot of things carried on to some extent, some of them into the Obama administration, particularly with respect to surveillance, that officials thought could be kept secret, and it's not possible. And so those costs have to be taken into account. And even if Hayden and Rizzo and all those folks are going out there and trying to defend their reputation, trying to defend the CIA from, as Biden properly put it, were gross mistakes, it seems that those costs will and have to be taken into account in thinking about going forward.
If the Obama administration decides to prosecute no one here, which seems to be the consensus within the administration, it's a little bit of a Gerald Ford kind of our long national nightmare is over. Does that dismantle the laws on the books as you see them?
I don't think so. I don't think prosecution is the only form of accountability. There are lots of forms of accountability, and this is one of them. The public airing of this is one form of accountability. And to be fair, prosecutors have a hurdle here because there were legal opinions by Department of Justice officials that were justifying a lot of what was going on. Now, that said, there were other things that were done above and beyond what was officially sanctioned. But I don't think prosecution is the only form of accountability here.
What about down at Gitmo, where there are actual cases that are underway before military tribunals? Is this a field day for defense attorneys, the evidence that comes out in this torture report?
It certainly is going to strengthen their case, as it should. It should really yield some real concerns about how key evidence is used in the case. Now, the chief prosecutor of the military commissions is very clear. He's not introducing evidence that was obtained through torture or through cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. That's the law, and he's abiding by it. But that said, there's all kinds of concerns about the treatment of these detainees, about their mental health, and the potential for evidence to have been derived indirectly from these techniques as well.
Do you think this is partisan?
I don't. I think that this was a very thorough, very robust report looking through thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of contemporaneous reports by the CIA itself at the time that this was happening, and that there is a partisan reaction to this, but I don't think that this report is partisan.
Jennifer Daskal is an attorney with Human Rights Watch and a professor at American University Washington School of Law. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
React to the report. Is it all water under the bridge?
This is Mark from Fort Worth, Texas. I don't think we went far enough or ever go far enough in protecting American lives. Enemy lives do not matter to me.
This is Gar in Seattle. I think it's simply a case of do unto others and also kind of pay attention to the Geneva Convention. What prevents them from just saying, oh, well, you did it to us, we'll do it to you, you know?
What are you paying attention to in this debate? Visit us at thetakeaway.org or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.